very excited to be here today to talk about Shattered Myths, which is going to be a review of the major findings from alcohol brand research among underage drinkers. Let me just find a place to place it. Is this the clicker? Yeah. So, first of all, neither myself nor any of my teammates or authors have any financial relationships to disclose or any other conflicts of interest. This study was funded by an NIAAA R01 grant. Just briefly, this is our authorship team. It's a mix of folks mostly from Boston University School of Public Health and Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. And I want to take a moment and dedicate this presentation to my father, who passed away a few weeks ago. He was a recovering alcoholic his whole life, and he was sober for over 30 years. This is his AA chip, and he also was a substance abuse counselor for about the same amount of time, and I've been thinking a lot of him lately, and I wish he was here. So, underage drinking, we know that it is a problem. And in terms of the prevalence in the United States, what we know is that about 70% of high school seniors have ever drank alcohol, and about a quarter of high school seniors have had alcohol in the past month. So this is definitely a frequent phenomenon. And we also know that underage drinking is not good for you. So some of the consequences of adolescent alcohol use include driving under the influence, which often leads to motor vehicle accidents, ER visits related to injuries, sexual assault, as well as a very increased risk of developing an alcohol use disorder down the road, and legal issues which could stem from any of the aforementioned consequences. In terms of how we measure youth drinking, we tend to measure it the same way that we assess anyone else's drinking. So the most common way of measuring youth drinking is to say, within a given reference period, so the past week, past month, past year, on how many days did you drink, and on a drinking day, about how many drinks did you consume? And this is a really handy measure. It's easy to ask. It's pretty easy to respond to. Unfortunately, it tends to average out any particular effects, and you're getting a mean value of overall drinking. So you might be missing major events that pertain to risky drinking behaviors. So we need brand level data for a lot of reasons, including the one that I just mentioned. When you see alcohol advertising, it's not for an alcohol category. You know, you don't see beer advertising. You see an advertisement for Corona. You don't just hear about whiskey. You see an ad for Jack Daniels. So alcohol marketing and advertising takes place at the brand level, and it doesn't make sense for us to ignore the consumption of alcohol at the brand level because that's where it's happening. And when we aggregate alcohol data, which is typically what we do, we ask overall how much have you been drinking and when were you drinking and what happened afterwards. When we pool all of that data together, we may be diluting some findings that are relevant at the brand level. And in order to capture that, we really need to improve our assessment of an analysis of the brand behaviors, the brand alcohol consumption behaviors of youth. Additionally, there are some parallels to youth tobacco use that are really compelling and I think important to note here. So I'm sure folks here have seen or heard of the R.J. Reynolds Old Joe campaign. This ran from the late 80s to late 90s, and it generated a huge, huge controversy, led to litigation on behalf of FTC and FDA and tobacco companies. And what was found is that this particular brand of cigarettes, of Camel cigarettes, they used this cartoon character, and the cartoon character was as recognizable to young children, very young children, as Mickey Mouse. So it had this really, really powerful influence and served as a catalyst for many episodes of litigation and generated a lot of pushback in terms of taking a look at how the tobacco industry markets to youth and what influence that brand-specific marketing has on children and adolescents. And in many ways, the A-brand research I'm going to talk about today is inspired by that history because this brand-level research was critical to pushing off a wave of litigation that eventually gave the FDA domain over tobacco control and tobacco marketing. So A-brand stands for Alcohol Brand Research Among Underage Drinkers. As I mentioned previously, it's a collaboration between Boston University and Johns Hopkins University Schools of Public Health. And our project spans four major topic areas. These are price and expenditures, surveillance and epidemiology data, social and popular media, and advertising and marketing. And I don't want to get too in-depth about each component of the methods, but I do want to give a brief review of each major category. So for our price and expenditures data, we conducted analysis of alcohol vendors' websites to look at the prices of alcohol that they were listing. We also engaged in policy research to identify brand-specific price data from both control and licensed states in the U.S. For our surveillance and epidemiology data, David talked about this yesterday at his talk, so if you were there, you have heard some of this before. We collected data from a pre-recruited sample via Knowledge Networks, which is now known as GFK MRI. And so they recruited for us a group of about 1,000 underage drinkers ages 13 to 20, and we conducted an internet-based survey that asked them about their use of nearly 900 different brands of alcohol. And the way that this worked, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but if you have questions, please ask me, because it's very, very interesting. For each alcohol category, so beer, vodka, rum, etc., the respondents indicated which specific brands of that alcoholic beverage they consumed, and in the past 30 days was the reference period, and they told us the number of drinks they had for each brand. So we're really getting down to the brand level, drink by drink, of all of these different categories. For a review of social and popular media, we did some qualitative analysis of Billboard magazine year-end charts, so actually looking at the lyrical content of different popular songs across genres, and that was from 2009 to 2011. And our team has also done a review of Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube websites, so really getting into the social media sites that are very popular among youth right now. In terms of advertising and marketing data, for our analysis of magazine advertisements, we worked with Nielsen Monitor Plus data, we worked with the Kantar Media Company, and we worked with Knowledge Networks, formerly known, so GFK MRI. Similarly, for our television advertising and marketing data, we used the survey that I mentioned previously. We actually asked youth, what TV programs are you watching, how often do you watch them, and we also used Nielsen advertising data. So I want to break down our major findings into 8 myths, and these are just some of the top-level findings. There are many more complex things that I could talk to you all day about if that's something that you want to do later. But for now, I want to distill this and debunk this into 8 specific myths. And the first myth is the idea that it's not even possible to measure youth alcohol use at the brand level, that because there's so many brands, I mean, we found about 900 brands, that it would just be too difficult. And so what we found is that not only is it possible, but it's actually pretty straightforward. And, you know, with enormous credit to the team for developing this really, really interesting interface, it allowed the youth to begin a survey and then, as I mentioned, go by category. It was programmed so that if they didn't drink a specific type of alcohol, they didn't have to answer all of the questions. So this was a very intuitive survey. And the average completion time was about 16 minutes. Median completion time was 16 minutes, and the majority of our respondents actually completed it in less than 20 minutes. So this is very comparable to other surveys that youth are given, and really was not too much of a mission to complete that kind of data. This is my favorite myth, because this is the one that I hear from everyone whenever I tell them about the study that we're working on, and everyone says, well, youth don't care what brand they drink, they just get whatever they can pull off the shelf or steal from their parents or whatever. And so what we found is that youth actually drink a very consistent and specific set of brands. We're seeing the same alcohol brands come up over and over in this analysis. If there was no relationship between youth alcohol consumption and youth brand preference, then it would be all over the place. We wouldn't see any patterns. But we are very much seeing strong patterns for specific brands. So some of the brands that are popular among youth include Bud Light, Smirnoff Malt Beverages, Budweiser, and Absolut Vodka. I don't want to get too into these charts, although they're very interesting. This is the breakdown of the top 10 alcoholic brands popular among youth according to gender. What you might see here is that there has been some change over time, or you're not seeing past data, but what you can see right now as a snapshot is that young women are drinking actually quite a lot more liquor than in previous years. So hard alcohol and spirits has become more commonly consumed among women than in prior years, prior surveys. Beer is still a little bit more popular among men, but there's quite a mix here. You're seeing flavored alcoholic beverages, you're seeing pure alcohol, spirits, you're seeing beer, so it's all over the map. Mike's Hard Alcohol, or it's like Mike's Twisted Teas, it's like a flavored alcoholic beverage. Yeah, it's kind of like a soda with alcohol in it. It's very sweet. So although there weren't a ton of differences between gender, apart from the trend towards hard alcohol use among young women, there were considerable differences when we broke down analysis according to race and ethnicity. So you'll see that some of these are ranked completely differently, and that also certain brands, for example, Hennessy and Ciroc, were much more popular among Black and African American youth relative to, say, Coors Light among non-Hispanic white youth, or Corona or Jose Cuervo tequilas among Hispanic youth. And just for funsies, this was a slide pulled from a Washington Post article written about our team's work, and this is a breakdown of what brands youth are consuming when they're binge drinking. So not only do they have brand preferences, they have brand preferences for when they go really hard on a night out. And again, we're seeing the same brands come up. So we're seeing Bud Light, we're seeing Jack Daniels, Smirnoff malt beverages again, Smirnoff vodkas, Corona. These same brands are going to keep popping up the more that we talk about this. The third myth I want to debunk is that youth drink the cheapest brands available. Right, that's just the cheapest stuff that they can get, whatever's bought on the shelf. Only one of the top 25 youth brands, which is Keystone Light, is actually ranked among the cheapest alcohol brands available. So that really just is not what's going on for these kids. Also, in the last couple slides, you're seeing, Hennessy is not the cheapest, Smirnoff is not the cheapest vodka, Jack Daniels is certainly not the cheapest whiskey, Absolut is not the cheapest, Jose Cuervo is not the cheapest. So these are not bottom of the shelf brands. There's a real tendency to go towards sort of the higher, mid to higher end alcohol brands. And additionally, I think it's worth noting that we found that there's significantly more price variation between brands than there is between beverage categories. So sometimes folks will say, well, youth probably just drink beer because beer's cheap. And that's true, beer can be cheap, but beer can also be extremely expensive. Whiskey can be really, really cheap, or you can get a really, really nice whiskey. So it's really important to look at the brand level because it's saying more than what we can observe from just looking at beverage categories. This is a really interesting one, and this is another major myth that we confronted. And the idea is that youth just drink what's popular among adults. They just mimic adult behavior. And so what we found is that there's definitely overlap with adult preferences, and some of that has to do with just what brands have market share and, who has the most advertising money. So, of course, you'd expect to see some overlap. But there are specific brands that are disproportionately popular among underage drinkers. And these include Corona Extra Light, which is over 9 times more popular among youth, Bacardi malt beverages, Smirnoff malt beverages, and I think Jack Daniels is something like 43 more times popular among underage youth. That's crazy. So, it's a scientific term, crazy. But it's shocking. I really do think it's shocking. So, this is a really important slide because it demonstrates that, again, there is a phenomenon occurring at the brand level among youth that isn't just a reflection or a facsimile of adult drinking behavior. I mentioned some other thoughts about this that often we hear. Well, youth just drink beer. They like the classics. Whatever they know, they're just going to drink. So, and of course, youth do drink beer. They drink the classics. They also consume a lot of alcoholic beverages that may be considered novelty beverages, like flavored alcoholic beverages, prepackaged energy drinks like Four Loko, Jello shots. Actually, we found to be quite popular among underage drinkers. And so, I think we really need to, as a field, start thinking outside of the box in terms of what we are asking youth about their drinking consumption, because it's not just beer and it's not just mixed drinks, it's all sorts of things. So there's a belief, which would be a very nice fairy tale if it were true, that youth are prevented from seeing alcohol and marketing ads on social networking sites and on the internet. Although you'll see this type of screen when you try to go to an alcohol website, and you may also be prompted to enter your age when you're on a social media site like a Facebook page for Patron. Although you have to do the age verification, as long as you're pretty good at math, you can just put a different birth year in and all of voila, you're 21 and you're on that website now. So age verification tools really are not, they're not doing the job that we'd like to think they're doing. Additionally, social networking sites are just full of alcohol content, both user-generated content and brand-sponsored content. Our review of Facebook found over 1,000 company-sponsored sites just on Facebook. So, we're seeing that age verification tools are not adequate. If you were at David's presentation yesterday, then, you know, we know that this is very much the Wild West of alcohol marketing. So we as public health advocates don't have access to all of the data that alcohol companies do and that social media sites do when it comes to these branded websites. So we are seeing a phenomenon here that we absolutely need to address, because youth spend so much time on these sites and we have no sense of what they're being exposed to and how we can prevent it. So this is a big issue that we want to work on moving forward. So another myth I'd like to debunk is the idea that because alcohol ads are everywhere, youth exposure to alcohol advertising is just kind of inevitable. It's just collateral. And what we found is that it isn't just a case of a 14-year-old watching 60 Minutes with their parents and they see an odd ad for a nice whiskey. You know, they're watching TV shows like The Daily Show and Tosh.0. They're watching TV shows that are very popular among their demographic and are loaded with alcohol ads. And, I mean, we got this data, so the alcohol companies for sure have this data, so this isn't just an accident of marketing. Youth are very much heavily exposed to brand-specific advertising on these TV shows that are really, really popular among adolescents and young adults. And notably, and I'll talk more about this in the next slide, youth were three times more likely to consume a brand if they were exposed to its television advertising. So TV advertising is still a very, very popular and very effective medium. And in line with this idea, there's the myth that even if alcohol advertising is effective at promoting a brand, it doesn't affect really what they're drinking. Maybe they'll see beer ads and it'll make them want to drink beer, but not necessarily Corona. Or there's this idea that, okay, maybe they'll see it and they'll drink Corona once, but it's not any kind of pattern. You know, it's just a one-off thing. What we found, though, is that any exposure to this brand-level advertising is associated with brand-specific consumption. So there seems to be some kind of reinforcing relationship here where youth are being disproportionately exposed to ads that are for alcoholic beverages that are disproportionately popular among youth. And that's a very, very powerful relationship to be underscoring. So particularly among young women 18 to 20, for those who read magazine ads, they're seeing a lot of ads that are depicting brands that we know from our survey data are preferred by underage drinkers. So that's the last myth, and I do want to wrap up. In terms of what this means for our field, for us as public health advocates, I think the first top line for me is that we can and should assess youth consumption of alcohol brands. I think we are missing out on a lot of really important data if we continue to just assess generally how much youth are drinking. We need to get to the brand level. We need to know who is doing this marketing and who is doing this advertising and hold them accountable. And we know that youth are frequently exposed through all of these different media, and also that they are being heavily exposed through social media networks that are not well regulated at this moment. I want to remind folks that our findings about brand preference are seemingly unrelated to both adult alcohol preferences, and they are not really related to brand price either. In sum, I think that future data collection on youth drinking would benefit a great deal from including brand-specific questions in surveillance. We know that it's possible and feasible and that it's not too time-consuming. And most of all, this research holds a lot of promise for, much like the old Joe Camel sparked all of this litigation and controversy, this holds great promise for being able to make substantial policy changes related to youth drinking.